It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to The Next Room. It's always a good day when I can step out into the studio. My puppy is just curled up in a ball down by my feet, which I love. And I get to introduce interesting people that have such creative, brilliant backgrounds. Roger Moore is my guest today. Roger is, oh my goodness, there's so much to unpack with Roger and what he does. He has several websites. He is a professional medical hypnotherapist. He's an expert in the medical area of hypnosis. He's known for his work with autoimmune diseases, cancer, dementia, end-of-life care, chronic pain, weight loss, trauma, stress, and anxiety. I mean, the beat goes on. This guy can do it all. He sent me a brand new copy of his book, which is called GreatestExpressionBook.com, and I fell face first into this book. It's just super easy to read, but it's all about becoming the best you. Becoming your best self possible, right? And isn't that what we're all here to strive to be, is the best variation of who we are on the planet? So without further ado, Roger Moore, welcome to The Next Room.
Well, thank you, Jane. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. You are a very busy man. I mean, you're in Palm Desert. You run Palm Desert Hypnosis. You've got hypnosishealthinfo.com, rogermooreinstitute.com, and slenderforlife.com. My goodness, what a busy, busy man you must be.
It does take a little bit of a juggling act and balance and trying to create harmony in my own personal life as well and putting it all together. It's very much a conscious act.
Yeah, a conscious act. That's good. Now, Roger, let's talk first and foremost about hypnosis. And how on earth did you get drawn into that avenue of the medical profession?
Well, actually, it started way back in the 1960s in high school. I was working an all-night crisis hotline at a drug center. And suicide prevention, overdose, and the phone wasn't ringing, and I was bored, and there was a book on hypnosis sitting there, and I started reading, and I've been hooked ever since.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And that got me. Yeah, that's how I got into it. Throughout the years, I did a lot of work in running residential and day programs for people with developmental disabilities. My original training was actually in drugs and alcohol counseling. I got a master's in marriage family therapy. And all along the way, I kept using hypnosis in the work that I did. And then I finally got certified as a clinical hypnotherapist and went in about 24 or 25 years ago, something like that, went into private practice.
Wow. Let's talk about hypnosis for a moment. I mean, any of us that have never experienced it on a medical professional level have the old, you know, all we have is the reference of what we've seen on TV. You know,
Hollywood, yeah.
Right. They take you in, they lay you on a couch, or they hold a, like a watch in front of you and you go back and forth. So talk to me about what the process is actually like when you are working with someone.
Well, first of all hypnosis is self-hypnosis.
Okay.
I or another hypnotherapist hypnotize anybody. We're tour guides. We tell stories. You are always in a trance. You're never not. And we're in this conversational trance right now. The listeners are in a listening trance right now. Hmm. When you're driving down the road and you hear the first note of a song on the radio and that you haven't heard since high school and you immediately start singing it, you're in radio trance. And when you get in your car and pull out of the driveway to go to the grocery store and you don't remember the drive in between, you're in driving trance. And when people are stressed and anxious and freaking out, or they're in stress and anxiety trance, or they're eating too much food too fast, they're in stress eating trances. What hypnosis really is taking control of the trance that you're in. In other words, getting out of that stress and anxiety trance and becoming aware of feet and floor, butt in the chair, aware of breath and breathing, and in spite of everything else that's going on in this world, right now in this moment, I'm okay. And getting to that place, then this is where you can live life. And yeah, there are stressors. All the stress reduction techniques, all the hypnosis in the world will not stop stressors from coming. But you can be calm and relaxed and energized and move through the stressors.
Man, I could listen to you all day. Like, I'm so with you in that trance space. Like, I'm one of those individuals that practices daily my mindful behavior. And
oh, good.
Yeah, I, you know, when I take my walks, I just go and just let my mind be one with nature. And it is a practice, you know. We need to, I don't know, that whole mindfulness, it's just so cool to be able to kind of get up and out of yourself and watch. So it's really about be here now. So you help control the trance state. So if someone has a negative, they're just, you know, stuffing food into their mouth, say that is their trigger, right? They're upset, they're stressed, and they're just overeating. How do you walk them through a session to get them to switch their gear to think better thoughts about and have a better relationship with food so they stop doing that?
Well, how I really got involved in medical hypnosis was actually through weight loss.
Okay.
I used to weigh 120 pounds more than I do now. I was overweight and obese
most
of my life. And about 26 years ago, when I was doing my formal certification for hypnosis, I volunteered to be the subject for a weight loss demonstration. And it was with the attitude of, yeah, this isn't going to work for me. As much as I believed in hypnosis, nothing, no diet, nothing had ever worked. So this isn't going to work either, and losing weight and keeping it off. And our instructor was like 20 years old, and it was like, who's this snot-nosed kid telling me I'm going to keep weight off? That was my attitude. And in spite of that attitude, I started noticing that I was eating less and I was eating slower. And I called him up, set up several more sessions, took the weight off, kept it off ever since.
Oh, my goodness.
And went from being a couch potato to I ran 5 marathons. I'm crazy on my bike, riding anywhere, you know, from 100 miles a week to 100 miles in a day or more. And, you know, that I'm just very active.
Wow.
But, you know, it gets down to that point of, am I in the stress trance? And, you know, upset and feeling unloved and whatever, and I'm trying to stuff it and numb it out with food? Or do I get in this moment and acknowledge, wait a minute, I am not physically hungry. I'm stressed, I'm frustrated, I'm upset, I'm bored, I'm lonely, I'm whatever I am. Maybe I'm just tired. But this isn't about food. So let's deal with the mental emotional issue versus trying to stuff it with food.
Dang. And I'm sure, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking that this would work as well for everything that we come across that stresses us in our life. Whether our trigger is to grab a bottle or to smoke a pack of cigarettes or stuff jelly donuts in our, you know, gullet. It seems to me that this mindfulness and just really getting to the core of what is going on in that noggin of ours. So it's sort of like you're rewiring your brain in essence.
Very much.
Yeah.
In fact, my book, Becoming the Greatest Expression of You, is really about rewiring your neurology, rewiring your brain. You can stand there. I talk a lot about meditating on being your best self and memorizing joy first thing every morning and doing it while you brush your teeth. You can stand there and meditate on what a crazy busy day you got, and you got to do this and got to do that, and stress yourself out while you brush your teeth. Or while you're that 2 minutes while the toothbrush is running, you can be meditating on being your best self, on being in a place of joy and handling the to-do list calmly and energized.
Right. Which brings me to Luna. Tell me about Luna.
Luna was our heart dog. Luna died in December.
I'm so sorry.
And she was 13 and a half years old. And, you know, we've had many dogs in our lives. But Luna was just very, very special. And part of the relationship that I had with Luna was I just learned so much about being a better person, being a better man, about unconditional love and gentleness from that dog.
Mm.
And you know, I have people write 1 to 3 sentences that describe their best self. And mine ultimately chunked down to, God, let me be the guy that Luna thinks I am today. In other words, if I could be the guy that she thinks I am, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Right.
Okay.
That's good.
Because I could do no wrong in her eyes. And if I stepped on her, because she, you know, always had to lay right behind my feet.
Sure.
And, you know, she'd jump, and she was immediately looking at me with unconditional love and her butt wiggling and her tail wagging. And, you know, I could do no wrong. So my goal every day is to be that guy.
I love that. Oh, my goodness. I strive to be the person Luna thinks I am. That's just really great. And very simplistic approach, too. I mean,
oh, very much.
Yeah, dogs are just, they're so loving and so genuine. And as mine is curled up on my feet right now, I'm kind of giggling because, you know, we rescued her right as the pandemic kind of, you know, started happening, like the day before the governor shut us down. And so we went, we bring this dog home. We only know what her mom was. We did not know what her father was. So we didn't really know what we were going to get here, right? But
yeah.
She has completely changed my life. I know so many more neighbors now because she and I go for what I call is a smell of the neighborhood. Because it's not about, not about me walking. It's about her smelling everything. And I let her
check out the pee mail.
Yep. I let her guide the way. I just let her take me wherever she wants to take me. And sometimes our walks are really long. Sometimes they're abbreviated and short. I'm like, you're the boss. So I love that. I strive to be the person Luna thinks I am. So Roger, let's talk about your work with end of life. You know, this show is about, you know, death, dying, grief. Can you use hypnosis with deep grief?
Very much. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that.
So, when I first started focusing on weight loss, then I started getting clients coming back with cancer or referring family and friends with cancer and other chronic health issues. And, you know, as people died, I would work with the family, with the partner, and and help them find that place of peace within them, of where they can have the love and the grief that they feel, the sorrow, and also the good memories. And you know, I can think of several situations where the day after a partner died, the other partner was in my office, and we would be laughing. You know, there'd be tears of grief and there'd be tears of laughter as we talked about how great this person was or the funny things they did or the funny memories they have with each other. But just helping people to find that peace of mind. But most of the work that I actually do is with the person themselves at their end of life, helping them find that peace to, you know, somebody may be dying of cancer. And I've worked actually with three people now who were at the end of life with COVID, and the hospital staff had the iPad on their lap, holding it for them, on the person's lap, and work with that person. But that even in those moments of end of life is near, there's still room for joy.
Mm.
There's still that place of peace of mind, and where, we can approach the end in fear and regret, or from a place of joy, a place of peacefulness, of calm, being relaxed about it. And one of the things I offer people is a death rehearsal.
Oh, please explain.
Well, often people are, they have all these fears conjured up about death, and they're mentally rehearsing a fearful, horrible, scary death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all imagination.
Okay.
So rather than using your imagination to remember as being, or to imagine it being scary and awful and terrifying, why not imagine it being the most beautiful experience you've ever had?
Mm.
Why not imagine it being peaceful and joyful? And so if somebody wants to do that, we spend time talking about what that might be like. And I take notes on what they're telling me. I guide them to that place. Sometimes they're talking about their experience with me during the session, and often it's in total silence. They're doing their work, and afterwards they may or may not choose to tell me about it. That's fine. It's in the privacy of their own mind. It's theirs. I don't need to know it. If they want to share it, I'm welcome to hear it. But again, it's about creating that peace, and living each moment fully, finding the most joy in every breath we have left.
Mm. I love that. It's so important, and you're right. I think that there's so much fear attached to dying. It's not, and people have got things in their head and maybe painful attachments to how it can be. But, it sounds to me like we can, even in our last moments, we can rewire and find the joy.
Right.
Yeah, that's great.
And sometimes it's working through regrets and forgiveness and, changing relationship with self and then the relationship with others.
Wow.
And often, any time that a caregiver or a partner that can come into the session, I welcome them. And I've had numerous times where the husband and wife would be in there together. And one couple in particular, I'm thinking of, she was the one with the cancer and the end of life. And she wanted the sessions, and she wanted him. And he was in total denial. She was trying to show him about their banking and their finances and where the checkbook was and what bank accounts and where the keys of the safe deposit box. And he would have none of it.
Wow.
And it was in our sessions that he finally started opening up to it, and they were able to go home and sit down and her give him everything she'd written out.
Wow.
So that, the light stayed on after she died.
Yeah.
And but he was in that deep of denial.
Yeah.
And actually, he's the one I was thinking of when I was telling about, what was it, thing of the day after, where we were laughing about this woman and the great memories he had of their life together.
Hmm. Wow, he must be so grateful to you and the process to be able to get to that place. First, to get to the place to accept that she was going to be checking out, and so that he could go through this process and know where all the stuff is, because it sounds like maybe she ran the show or the household. And then the second part of it is to be able to have happy thoughts about their beautiful time together before she became ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And, he could talk about his grief And I still hear from him once in a while. It's been a number of years that we've stayed in touch. And he's actually now remarried. He's in his 80s and remarried. He still talks about her, and he still cries about her, and he still laughs about her. And
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Just being able to speak with someone about your loved one, you know, because a lot of times I have found, and all the people that through interviewing people, the greatest thing you can do after someone has lost someone significant is to ask them to talk about that person.
Yes.
So and a lot of people just don't want to hear it, or they avoid it. And it's like, oh, I don't even want to ask them about that because that'll make them sad. Where this is what you do as a profession. Wow. It's just fascinating.
I remember my mom died 3 years ago, I think it was, the age of 96. But I remember one of the things that just used to upset her so much is people come and visit. And my dad died several years before. And she'd be so upset that not once did they ever mention him. Mm. Or if she brought him up, they'd change the subject.
Oh, man.
And, you know, she said, what is with that?
Yeah.
Why can't we talk about him?
Yeah. You know, this is, brings up a very good point. You know, anyone listening right now, if you have a family member or a friend or even someone you work with, an acquaintance, neighbor, and they have gone through a recent loss, do them a favor and ask them about the person. Just ask them to tell you a funny story, and then it goes from there. You know, it's a really powerful thing.
And the other thing is, if you know somebody that is at the end stages of life, listen to them. Let them talk about death, about dying. Because so often, you know, when one of the things that I hear in my office, people just who are dying want a place to talk where it's safe, where nobody's going to tell them, well, if you just pray more or pray harder, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Or, oh, don't talk like that. You'll be okay. Yeah. That's denial, and it's very isolating and very lonely.
Yeah.
And they know they're dying, and they just want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And nobody will listen.
Hmm. Well, thankfully, we have people like Roger Moore in our life. That's just a really, really amazing profession that you have been drawn to, and I'm super impressed. And you just have this very peaceful, very genuine vibe. Like, literally, I'm sitting here just thinking about everything that we're talking about as I'm in this trance with you. I'm like, well, no wonder why you're successful. You know.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
it's really amazing. So your brand new book, it's called greatestexpressionbook.com.
The title of the book is Becoming the Greatest Expression of You.
Yes, that's right. And the website is greatestexpressionbook.com. sorry about
Correct.
That Becoming the Greatest Expression of You: Create Your Future to Be Greater Than Your Past. What do you mean by that phrase?
Well, when people come into my office, well, actually, my sessions are now 100% online. I have clients online worldwide. But when people start talking to me, they're often telling me about the past and reliving the past, and they're responding to today's events as if they were 5 years old or 13 years old or whatever age. You know, that based on past experience, they're reliving and doing the same old thing over and over, harder and harder, faster and faster, wanting different results. And what I talk about is that we do get to create our future to be greater than the past, rather than pulling out that story that we've known all our lives and repeating the same thoughts and the same emotions and the same actions. Why, you know, for instance, when I was 5 years old, my grandmother and I would make cinnamon rolls, homemade cinnamon rolls. And it was a time of unconditional love, unconditional acceptance. And we'd have, you know, dough fights and all those things. And so as a young adult, you know, Grandma had been dead for many years. Anytime I felt the least bit unloved, least bit unexpected, mm-hmm. I'd go to the bakery and buy two or three cinnamon rolls and eat them on the drive back. Okay.
Yeah.
That was my relationship with food and how I handled feeling unloved. How I created love was through bath salt and sugar.
Wow.
Well, we get to write a whole new story based on this moment. Right now, I might be feeling unloved, but that love needs to come from within me first. I need to love myself first so that I accept and receive the love from others.
Absolutely. I knew you were going there with that cinnamon roll story. I can see that as a little boy. And so, you know, you were hardwired. That was, you equate that cinnamon roll with love and laughter and joy with your grandmother. And so whenever you are sad, you wanted to go back and create that
right.
joy again.
Because, so. You know, in 2021, I do not need to be pulling out that five-year-old book.
Yeah.
That book from when I was five.
Yep.
And rereading and reacting and living it out.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I still love the smell of a cinnamon roll.
Oh, I bet.
You know, and it brings back these wonderful, joyful memories. And yet the last time I had a bite of somebody's, it was so full of sugar, it just gave me the willies. And it's like, I have absolutely no desire to eat one, but I hope I will always love the smell.
Yeah. Well, smell is just that olfactory sense. It's one of
yeah.
our strongest senses, right? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I to this day, I smell Lagerfeld. You know, that's my dad. If I smell, you know, cigar smoke, I think of my uncle. You know, I mean,
yeah.
there's just certain smells, and it's just so fabulous that you can, you know, connect in that strength of being able to smell something. My goodness, I told you this was going to go fast. I'm so happy that we connected. We actually connected through the Beautiful Dying Expo a couple
yes,
years ago, but we never, ever got around to having a show. So I'm really happy that here we are years later. Let me give a nice little plug to the Beautiful Dying Expo. It's coming up this November 12th, 13th, and 14th. It is absolutely free. However, if you register, all they need is your name and in an email address. There are some really cool free things that are going to happen, like books and just wonderful freebies. So go to beautifuldyingexpo.com and sign up today. Roger Moore's my guest. He is a professional medical hypnotherapist and has this great book called Becoming the Greatest Expression of You. I will put links to all of his various websites, Slender for Life, Roger Moore Institute, Hypnosis Health Info, Palm Desert Hypnosis, and actually rogermoorebooks.com. So I would assume that they'll be able to get your new book right there if they want.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful. In closing, Roger, I love to ask everyone this particular question. The name of the show is The Next Room. What is in the next room, or what do you hope or think or maybe even know intuitively is in the next room for you?
It's about creating more community. And I think we change the world by, you know, one person at a time. And it's like we've become so isolated and so divisive that if we just start coming together and helping each other out, we have a new puppy, we go to the dog park, and it's this most amazing community where people pick up each other's dog's dog poop.
Yeah.
Just those little acts of kindness. That gives me hope of maybe we can turn things around.
All right. I like it. Roger Moore is my guest today on The Next Room. Roger, thank you so much for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule. And what a lovely story about how you went from 120 pounds overweight, and here you are, this active and extremely healthy man. I love that you used hypnosis to get to the point where you are healthy and free and whole, living your best self. And here now you're helping other people to do the same thing.
And it truly is about becoming. I haven't arrived. I'm working on it.
There you go. Amen to that one. Thank you so much for coming on the next room. Roger Moore,
well,
my...
thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Roger.
Thank you, Jane. It's my honor. Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for tuning into The Next Room. I will be back next week, of course. The show airs every single Monday. And then, of course, you can download on-demand listening. It's everywhere. It's on 11 different platforms. Please connect with me on the Facebook page, The Next Room. We have a really nice community there. And as I mentioned earlier, the Beautiful Dying Expo coming up November 12th, 13th, and 14th. I'll be broadcasting live from the main stage, and I am thrilled to tell you that I'm going to have the reigning queen of grief, Jan Warner's agreed to come on with me. Pamela Osley will be with me. Casey Gaunt, just a fabulous author. Boy, who am I forgetting? Sarah Bamford Seidelman is going to join me on the main stage. So it's going to be a lot of fun this year. So please join us at the Beautiful Dying Expo coming up in November, this 2021, just in case you're wondering. Thanks so much for tuning in to The Next Room.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.